always put me down. Because the things I say are not real smart. I got these guys to help me lead this nation. Talking about my admin, the guys I work with. Oh, yeah. My administration, baby. We started off going into Afghanistan. We shifted the blame and put it on Saddam Hussein. The media perpetuates a terrorization. Hey, I said it. So we can pass draconian bad laws.
You're listening to the Edge Radio program, a show so hot, your radio might catch on fire.
Dave, welcome to the Edge Radio broadcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Before you came on, I was telling the folks there that we've had Eric Hufschmidt on, and he had sort of the engineering aspect of the 9/11 issue. But you bring evidence, video evidence, that was available sort of right after 9/11, but then sort of disappeared. But how did you get those videos?
Well, basically, this is video evidence that was broadcast live. Many of the people out there listening right now were watching live on September 11th, and I'm sure many of the folks out there listening also put a blank tape in their VCR and started taping. And that's exactly what we suggested to our listeners to do, because we went on the air at exactly 9 o'clock Eastern Time on September 11th, and at that point in history, of course, the North Tower had already been struck, and we were monitoring this on our television set on CNN. And when our microphone went live on our radio program, the Power Hour, the first thing I did is I said, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, run to your TV set and put a blank tape in your VCR if you have one and start taping any network that you can. And many of our listeners did exactly that. And in the ensuing months, we ended up with between 65 and 70 videotapes from all different networks. Footage from MSNBC, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN, all of them. And that's how we ended up with all of this footage. And several months later, it dawned on me that I was probably the only person in the country that had access to all of the different network footage that was not connected in any way with the networks. Mm-hmm. So that's how we had access to a lot of the clips that you saw.
Yeah, but somehow you knew this was going to be an event worth videotaping, and you gave that announcement for people to record. Now, on that video, there are some astounding evidence. It looks like to me that one, a plane never hit the Pentagon, and two, there was something underneath one of the planes that hit the towers. And we've got a couple hours to talk about that tonight, Dave, but let's start with that, what's known as the pod, I suppose. What was that, in your estimation?
Well, frankly, I don't know what it is. And people challenge me all the time and say, well, look, if you don't know what it is, you shouldn't even be talking about it. And I disagree wholeheartedly. Obviously, as was reported, Flight 175, a Boeing 767, had departed Boston Logan International Airport, and it was that plane that they reported had slammed into the South Tower. And, of course, you know, many of us saw that occurrence live. Most of the networks had footage of that as it happened. And, as I said, many of the listeners out there were probably videotaping. And that's where the video clips came from. However, in the clip from CNN, and there were frames from that video clip that were put on the front page of newspapers and in almost every magazine commemorating this horrific event. And I'm sure you all know the clip. If you imagine in your mind's eye the South Tower right in front of you, and the plane comes as if it flew over your left shoulder and slams right into the building. We all saw that.
Yeah.
Now, that's the clip that really has raised a lot of questions, because when you look at it in slow motion, and the networks never showed it to you in slow motion, and when you look at that, there appears to be something rather large attached to the belly of the fuselage, just to the right side, right center of the fuselage. And you can see it quite clearly. Now, some folks have said it's a reflection. Others have said it's sunlight. But nobody knows quite what it is. The bottom line here is, if there's something attached to the belly of the plane, that raises the question, where did this plane come from? because after all, if this was a commercial 767 from Boston Logan, and it had this object attached to the belly of the plane, and we estimate anywhere between 12 and 16 feet in length, we have to ask the question, how could this have gone unnoticed? I mean, we've got baggage handlers, fuel service personnel, food service personnel, maintenance workers, traffic directors with their flashlight. You've got crew members, passengers, pilots, control tower. Somebody would have seen an object this big strapped to the belly of this plane. So this is why we have to ask the question, where did this plane come from? Now, this is not just me that has said this. We have shown these video clips to, the in-plane sight video has been viewed by a two-star general, a full-bird Air Force colonel, an Air Force major, Army major, 33-year veteran from the Department of Defense and Missile Defense Guidance Systems, along with about a half a dozen pilots. One of them, by the name of Russell Wittenberg, was a United Airlines pilot who flew Flight 175 right up until about 2 months before September 11th when he retired. And all of the people that I've mentioned after viewing this video agree that, one, the damage to the Pentagon was inconsistent with a 757 hitting it, and number two, the object that appears on the bottom of the plane that hit the South Tower indicates that the planes had to have been substituted. Now, that's not me. Those are Air Force and airline pilots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave, now when you talk about substituting planes, and in fact when you talk about a plane that did not hit the Pentagon, the classic, supposed to be the argument ender, is where were the people? Where did the people go that were supposed to be on those planes?
Well, again, that's one of those questions. It's just like the people say, well, then what was that pod? I can't tell you what that pod was. I don't know what it was, but whatever it is, it's not supposed to be there. Now, as far as the question of where do the people go, where do the planes go, you have to answer that question. Well, no, I don't. And here's an example. Consider this analogy. Now, you're in Indianapolis, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's say, Daniel, that you have to put a loved one on a bus. And let's say the bus is going to go to Cincinnati.
All right.
So you go down to the Greyhound bus terminal, you buy a Greyhound bus ticket, and you put your loved one on the Greyhound bus bound for Cincinnati. Later that afternoon, we interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin. A Greyhound bus that was bound from Indianapolis to Cincinnati lost control as it entered the city. It skidded into City Hall and exploded, and all were killed.
All right.
And it's a terrible tragedy, and there's funeral services and memorial services and flags at half staff. Well, a couple of weeks later, someone who happened to be sightseeing in Cincinnati happened to catch the event on tape. And when you review the tape and you see the bus skidding through the viewfinder and slamming into City Hall and exploding, and you look at the side of this bus and it says Trailways on the side. Question, where did the Greyhound bus go? I don't know. But if your loved one was on that Greyhound bus, you certainly would want a full-blown independent investigation, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the second question that is raised is, should we demonize, ridicule, discredit, and condemn the person who took the video and anyone who dares ask the question, where did the Greyhound bus go?
Well,
this is exactly what's happening in the 9/11 quote-unquote truth community, because some people are condemning anybody who even discusses or breathes a word of mention about pods or about flashes or anything that is outside of the conventional wisdom investigation into September 11th.
Yeah, now what you're saying, Dave, is that you're one of the things you're bringing to the table is, in fact, there was some sort of pod underneath that plane, but the people within the 9/11 investigation, sort of outside of the system, that group is not appreciating the fact that you're even mentioning that pod. Is that right?
Well, they're trying to convince other people, and there has been pressure applied and intimidation techniques applied to anybody who talks about that, because they're trying to somehow say that any discussion of these things is going to discredit the real investigation into September 11th. Which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, if we truly want to get to the truth, I mean, everybody has opinion. It's just like a belly button. You've heard that saying before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
everybody's got one. Right.
And if we truly want to get to the what happened on September 11th, there are many, many investigators out there investigating different aspects of what happened on September 11th. And what we all need to do is leave our egos and our pride at the door. Come together and everybody contribute their puzzle pieces, throw them on a table, and work together to come to make a picture.
Sure.
To come to some sort of conclusion as to what happened. But that's not what's happening in the 9/11 truth community. Some people have their particular angle, and everybody else is wrong in their eyes. And everybody's fighting amongst one another. I mean, there's this concept about, you know, united we stand, divided we fall.
Yeah.
And this seems to escape the psyche of some of the so-called investigators into September 11th. Now, despite the fact that we have had military experts, and not just military experts, but experts in identifying aircraft and aircraft parts, military experts, airline pilots, they're all familiar with these aircraft. And despite the fact that all of these people have come forward and agree with the concept that there was something afoot with the plane that hit the South Tower, the people that are in the 9/11 truth community are condemning those people that discuss these things. Now, the other thing that goes along with the pod issue is the flash that occurred just as the plane was about to hit the South Tower. And that flash was captured from four different angles, actually five, but we only had four of them in the film. And the flash occurs to the right and below center in the fuselage.
Yeah.
Now, the argument can be made, flash can be made from several different occurrences. The suggestions are, number one, a reflection from the sun. Number two, sparks from the nose of the fuselage hitting the concrete. Number three is a static discharge. And number four would be something incendiary in nature. Now, after discussing this flash anomaly with all the different experts, those are the four different possibilities that come to the table. So one by one, we discuss them and apply them to what we saw in these video clips.
Right.
The first was a reflection of the sun. Well, we can dismiss this immediately for two reasons. Number one, a reflection usually is only seen from one angle. Like if I take a mirror and I reflect the sun's rays, that reflection only goes where you direct that. The reflection.
Right.
Okay, I mean, you can aim the sun's rays and you can reflect it in somebody's eyes. It's not going to be seen from four different angles. The other reason why it can't be a reflection is because the flash occurred on the shaded side of the building. So we can rule out reflection. Number two is sparks from the nose hitting the concrete of the South Tower. Well, when you examine the flash on these video clips, it is very clear that the flash actually occurs to the right of the contact point of the fuselage by about 6 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
So it can't be sparks of the nose hitting the fuselage because the flash didn't occur at the contact point. So we can rule out sparks.
All right.
The third possibility is static discharge. Well, there are a couple of reasons why this has been ruled out, and this I want to thank Glenn Standish, who was an airline pilot, also Neela Sagadevan, who is an airline pilot and an airline pilot instructor, and also Colonel George Nelson, United States Air Force. Now, they've explained to me that static does build up in aircraft mostly when it moves through precipitation, clouds, or rain. Now, first of all, September 11th was a virtually cloudless day. It was a clear blue sky.
Yep, correct.
So we can rule out static buildup in the plane. But the other reason we could rule it out, even if there was a static charge, the static is going to discharge at the closest point of contact, which, of course, would have been where the nose struck the tower. Sort of like when you reach for your car door. Daniel, have you ever reached for a car door and got a shock?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, the spark doesn't go from your elbow to the car. It goes from where your hand is closest. So this is not consistent with the flash occurring 6 to 10 feet to the right and below center of the nose. So the only possible, what's left here, is something that is incendiary in nature. Now, once again, when you examine closely the location of the flash, it just so happens to be directly in line with the anomaly we call the pod. So that reinforces the very existence of the pod. So we're using logic, common sense, and expert testimony and, you know, experts in their field to be able to do some sort of an assessment of some of the video clips that we're seeing.
Yeah.
So these are very real issues that raise very real questions, and these are questions that some people just don't want asked, let alone answered.
You know, Dave, when you talk about that that flash, that sort of reminds me of the standoff there in Waco, where there's a flash right in front of the turret of the tank as it was pulling out of the building there, where they were inserting a incendiary device.
Right.
So, you know. But anyway, within the context or within the community of 9/11, it seems that people would want to get together to try to have a united force to with overwhelming evidence, say, look, something's going on here. Somebody knows something they're not telling. But in that context, Dave, how is it that, as you said, there had to be people on the ground in the air, you know, even video for that matter, eyewitness accounts. A lot of people would have to see this. How is it they could all not see this? Were they all in on it?
Well, again, you're asking a question that I have no answer for. You know, people come back with the argument, oh, my gosh, Dave, you're saying that there's a huge conspiracy. There would have to be so many people involved in this whole thing that, you know, that it couldn't possibly happen. Well, you may be right. I mean, for all I know, that's a very strong argument. You couldn't have thousands of people involved with this thing because, of course, that would present a possibility that somebody would talk. But that doesn't negate the evidence. The evidence is real. These are facts that we're talking about. The video clips are real. And people, if they don't want to believe what I'm telling you, I would suggest if you think that the video footage has been doctored or altered in any way, I mean, those are accusations that have been made. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the accusations and charges that people have made in the production of this film. And they're absolutely baseless because it's extremely easy to prove that these are absolutely unadulterated video clips. Simply go to your Barnes & Noble or your local videos. What's the other one? Borders. There
yep.
you go.
Borders.
Or you
books
can even go online to Amazon.com and order a copy of America Remembers by CNN. That's their commemorative 9/11 video production. And if you'll go to 7 minutes and 35 seconds into the production, you will see the exact clip that we're talking about, and you'll see exactly what I've just described. Now, the flash also occurred, by the way, Daniel, when the North Tower was hit by what we were told was Flight 11.
Really?
Now, the only known video that we have of that event was, of course, shot by the Naudé brothers, the French videographers, who were in New York City doing a documentary about the New York City firefighters. And we've all seen that clip. The firefighters are in the street, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, doing their thing.
Right.
And then you hear the jet fly overhead. The camera pans up and to the left, just in time to see the first tower being struck.
Okay.
Now, again, this video clip is not only on the Naudé brothers video, but it's also included in the CNN video, and that is available at 3 minutes and 32 seconds into the production. And again, when you take that video clip and you slow it down, there is irrefutable photographic evidence that a flash occurs just before that plane hits the tower. So that reinforces, once again, the occurrence of a flash occurring before both of these planes hit their targets. Now, the interesting thing is that when you see this flash, it is very clear that the flash occurs before the plane hits the tower.
Mm-hmm.
We ran it in slow motion. We ran it forwards, backwards, and you've seen the clip, correct?
Yes, I have. Uh-huh.
Okay. Would you agree that there's a flash there?
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
And would you agree that the flash occurs before the plane hits the tower?
Yes, it does, Dave. Yes, it does.
Well, there we go. Now, what does this flash have to do with some terrorists inside wielding box cutters or plastic knives?
Well, that tells me there's something else going on here, Dave.
That's exactly the point, and that's the whole point of this film. I don't claim to have the answers, but I sure do have some questions.
Well,
and I think we all need to have these questions answered because the course that our country and indeed world history has taken in the past 4-plus years is all predicated on the events of September 11th. Now, we've launched not one but two wars, and we have contaminated the entire Middle East with depleted uranium shells for 4.5 billion years. we will be affecting that area of the world, and indeed the entire world, for generations to come.
Okay.
And not only that, but look at how our rights are being destroyed. Mm-hmm. We have the Model States Emergency Health Powers Act. We have Homeland Security. We have Patriot Act 1, Patriot Act 2. And in your neighboring state of Ohio, they just passed a super-duper Patriot bill where now the police can pull you over and ask the question that the Nazis ask. Show me your papers.
Whoa.
Now, this, all of this is predicated on 9/11. And if what we were told happened on 9/11 is a lie, then we need to clearly find out what really happened, because our entire world is changing because of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave, let's jump ahead a little bit. If indeed this was a staged act, what is the purpose of us? Obviously, that brought us to the war and to the Patriot Act and these things. Is there an overarching purpose for this whole thing? What is this leading us to? What is it, what's the goal?
Well, if I attempt to answer that, that can only be an exercise in speculation and, if you will, conspiracy theory. But in order, as they say, if you don't remember your history, you're destined to repeat it. So in order to answer that question, we have to ask a couple of questions and review history. Now, first of all, let's go back to Pearl Harbor. Now, we now know, it's become common knowledge, that they did have intelligence about 2 days before the attack on Pearl Harbor that it was going to occur.
Yeah.
Retired Lieutenant Commander Kenneth Landis has been a guest on our program. He's written a book called The Pearl Harbor Deception. And there have been television programs on the History Channel, on National Geographic, on the Military Channel, where they do bring up the issue about military intelligence indicating that an attack on Pearl Harbor was imminent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And for whatever reason, they chose to withhold that information because they were hoping that they could get an entry point into the Second World War.
Right.
So they withheld the information, and by doing so, they sacrificed 2,000 of our men and women in uniform. Now, let's fast forward to 1961, when the Joint Chiefs drew up a plan called the Northwoods Plan. And the Northwoods document, by the way, is posted at our website, 9/11 in Plain Sight. Now, this was a plan, thank God they never followed through with it, but it demonstrates a mindset. Now, the whole purpose of this plan was to generate hatred towards Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Certainly.
And the way that they intended to do that was that they were going to sink our own ships, shoot down our own planes, and conduct terrorist attacks and start riots and blame it all on the Cubans.
Yeah.
Now, this again demonstrates a mindset, like I just said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with those two pieces of history in place, let's fast forward to the 1990s. Now, at this particular time, the wall had come down in Russia, and now Russia's our big friend, and China has become our biggest trading partner. So now, with these two things in mind, we have to ask a question. Daniel, I'll let you answer this one.
All right, go.
What is the biggest business in the world?
Oil?
Bigger than oil, Daniel. Try again.
Plastic trinkets from China?
Well, that's a close second, but I think we can all agree that defense contracting is indeed the biggest business in the world.
Yeah, weapons.
It includes all of the other businesses. It includes oil, technology, manufacturing, agriculture, textiles, communication, electronics, everything. So I think we can all agree that defense contracting is the biggest business in the world.
All right.
Now, here's a common sense, no-brainer question, a challenge for those to think outside of the cage for a moment. How do defense contractors guarantee profitability and job security?
By creating a war?
There you go. They have to guarantee that there's a need. So they make money from war. Second question. If the wall had come down, Russia was our big friend, and China was our biggest trading partner, how many world superpowers represented a threat to the United States, if any?
Not many. I don't think not many.
I don't think there were either. So how financially secure do you think the defense contractors were?
Okay, so the speculation then is that there needs to be war and the supply to the war, and therefore if there isn't a war, somebody's going to create one.
Bingo. Now, what better war to have than a war, as Dick Cheney said, could last for decades?
Well, that's
a
convenient.
War on terror. Mm-hmm. A war with a nameless, faceless enemy
exactly.
that could strike in dark of night and any corner of the globe.
Hmm.
What a perfect war to have. Wouldn't you agree?
That's very convenient, frankly.
Sure. So if, and I'm saying if, that this was the goal, who would be the likely candidate that they could set up to be able to orchestrate this war? Well, of course, we all know that Osama bin Laden is the bad guy, or so we've been told. I'm not saying that he's a good guy. I don't like terrorists. I don't like Osama. I don't like Saddam. I don't like Al-Qaeda. I don't like any of these people. However, it's now also common knowledge to anybody who's done any reading or research on the subject that Osama bin Laden and the entire bin Laden family have been business partners with the Bush administration
for
approximately 20 years through the Carlyle Group. Have you discussed this on your program at all?
No, but I'm very well aware of that.
Okay. So if we have Osama bin Laden, who is a known CIA asset, he was trained by the CIA, funded by the CIA, put into power by the CIA, wouldn't you think that he would be the perfect candidate to so-called mastermind a September 11th attack, somebody that we could blame, a 1984 Goldstein, if you will?
Well, you know, that is kind of convenient, Dave. It seems to me they'd want to eliminate him before he told the truth, maybe.
Well, yeah, but gee, George Bush has stated not too long ago that Osama was no longer their prime target, wasn't he?
Yeah, he veered off of that. Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. So, again, in order to solve a crime, we need to be able to have a motive, and we need to have, of course, some suspects. And you have to ask the question, who benefits? So let's start with who benefits. Did the people of Afghanistan benefit after September 11th?
Well, now
I don't think so.
Well, on their
they got the snakes not bombed out of them. They got a provisional puppet government put in place. And, oh, by the way, Afghanistan was well on its way to completely eliminating its poppy crop and its drug production until after the bombing, and the United States put in their provisional government. And a year ago, it'll be 2 years in just about a month, that they announced that they had the largest poppy crop in history a year after we had gone in and taken over. Does anybody smell a rat in this one?
Huh. That's convenient.
So, we have to ask the question, who benefits? Now, if you look at a world map and you see the location of Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran, keep in mind also that the Carlyle Group has been looking for a way to place a pipeline between the Caspian Sea and the Sea of Arabia. Well, I'll give you a guess on which countries the pipeline would have to pass through to get down to the Sea of Arabia. Go ahead, Daniel. Take a wild guess.
Afghanistan?
Afghanistan's one of them, yep.
Iraq?
Iraq or Iran. They're going to have to go one way or the other because of the mountain range.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the bottom line here is when you start putting two and two together and thinking outside of a prepared cage that's been groomed meticulously by the mainstream media, you begin to get a very clear and possible picture. You begin to get a clear motive. And you also begin to be able to answer the question, who benefits?
Mm-hmm. All right, I tell you what, Dave, we need to leave it right there, and I need to go to commercial break. So just stay with us through the break, please. Everybody, you're listening to The Edge radio broadcast. My name is Daniel Ott, and you're listening to Dave Von Kleist. And you can go to his website, thepowerhour.com. The link is on theedgeradio.com website. And if you have a question for Dave, go to theedgeam.com website. Click on Fast Blast. It'll come right here to the studio.
Turn it up!
You're listening to The Edge.
Are you ready?
On AM 1590, WNTS, Beech Grove, Indianapolis.
Hello, everybody. This is Daniel Ott, host of the Edge radio broadcast. You know, what's making this show such a success is people like you, our loyal listeners. Tell a friend about the show. Call or email your local radio stations and tell them about the show. Let your local radio stations know that The Edge is a free broadcast with some of the most important interviews of our time. Micro broadcasters to giant radio stations can all broadcast the Edge for free. Tell them to upgrade their program lineup and get the Edge on the air in your area. I'm Daniel Ott, discovering the truth together on the Edge Radio Broadcast.
And now back to the hottest new show on radio. You're listening to The Edge with your host, Daniel Ott.
And we're back with the Edge Radio Broadcast. My name is Daniel Ott, and on our newsmaker line, we have with us this evening Dave Von Cleese. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
Well, we've got a number of questions come in on the Fast Blast for you. And one of those questions, are you familiar with the, and I think it's maybe on somebody else's website, some clips of Larry Silverstein, how that he purchased the three towers, the Building 7, the 1 and 2 towers for, I guess he bought the lease for $200 million and got $7 billion from the insurance company. Does he have a connection to this, you think?
Well, that's a rather convenient financial reward to be given to Mr. Silverstein, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, kind of.
They say follow the money trail. We didn't have a whole lot as far as video clips, aside from the actual collapse of Building 7. But I think that anybody that's seen those video clips will agree that that building came down, as did the trade centers, looking almost identical to a prepared demolition, mm-hmm. a controlled demolition. And it was rather curious that Mr. Ott had made the statement on a PBS special, America Rebuilds, where he had given the order to pull it. Now, pull it is the term that's used by controlled demolition experts when they actually, quote-unquote, push the button to set off the charges to bring it down. So it was rather curious that he would make that statement that the firefighters, there would have been such terrible loss of life, and they decided mm-hmm. that it would be better to pull the building. So they went ahead to give the order to pull it.
Mm. And it was just kind of convenient that only Mr. Silverstein's building went down. Only his buildings went down. Hey, we have another question for you, Dave.
Sure.
When we all seen the classic video clip of President Bush sitting in the grade school as he gets the information that a plane had hit. But wasn't there a conflict in his statements when he said he was in a limo and he saw that on the news and then he went to the grade school? Were you familiar with that controversy?
Right. We have a clip. I don't know if this is the clip that you're referring to, but we do have an audio clip in the video production 9/11 in Plain Sight where he is discussing a grade school child had asked him, what did you think when the first plane hit the first tower? And he goes in to explain that he was watching a TV monitor. He said they had a TV monitor on in the classroom, and he said that he saw the first plane hit the first tower, and he thought, well, gosh, that must have been a terrible pilot error or something.
Mm-hmm.
And let's stop right there. Why would President Bush say that he had seen the first plane hit the first tower when that was not on television? That was a surprise. That was not broadcast anywhere, and the only piece of footage known, as we mentioned before, would just happen to be caught by the Naudé brothers when they were filming their documentary on the streets of New York City. So for him to make that statement that he had seen the first plane hit the first tower, well, he was either mistaken or he was just making this up.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have another question, and this is on a different side of the 9/11 controversy. Somebody wants to know, is as a result of 9/11, do you believe that Israel, A, was involved in any way, or do you think that it has benefited, the 9/11 thing has benefited Israel anyway by deflecting criticism to their occupied territories?
Well, you know, people always want to try to bring Israel into the argument. I can't say one way or the other. I really don't know whether or not Israel was involved, the people try to bring in the Mossad or anything like that. I can't answer that one way or the other. I'm raising questions. I don't have a whole lot of answers.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of this video project was to show video clips and simply ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of people out there listening to the broadcast right now that unfortunately will immediately, with the knee-jerk reaction, come back and say, well, Dave, you're a conspiracy theorist. And I would challenge anybody that has seen the video, and Daniel, you've seen the video.
Yeah.
would ask you, and I want you to answer honestly, did I theorize at any time in the production of 9/11 in Plain Sight?
No, Dave, what you did was you just really commented on existing actual footage.
Okay. So if I'm not theorizing, how could I possibly be a conspiracy theorist?
No, I didn't get that at all.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
No.
And just to be fair, I think it's only fair that we define the term conspiracy theory, because this is part of the brainwashing or the conditioning that Americans have been subjected to for decades. I mean, after all, if you play word association and you mention the word conspiracy, what's the first word that comes to mind?
Theory.
Theory.
Right, theory.
And that's because we've all been conditioned to associate theory with conspiracy because, of course, there's no such thing as real conspiracies. They're all theories. Well, the active word in the phrase conspiracy theory is theory. Now, the definition of a theory is an idea, a concept, a supposition. Here's an example. If you were to purchase a raffle ticket, in theory, you could win a prize. Now, if you don't purchase a raffle ticket, the win is theoretical. But once you purchase one raffle ticket, the win is no longer a theory. It becomes a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a remote possibility, but nonetheless, it is a possibility. And the more raffle tickets you purchase, the more possible and eventually probable the win becomes. That's exactly the case with a conspiracy theory. When there is no evidence, the charge of conspiracy is a theory. That's why it's a conspiracy theory. However, once you have one piece of evidence, it's no longer a theory. It becomes a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the more evidence that you gather, the more possible and eventually probable the conspiracy is. And so the 9/11 in plain sight documentary is a compilation and a collection of video and photographic evidence. So the discussion about whether or not there's a conspiracy here is not a theory. It is a possibility. And we're simply asking questions. Now, mm-hmm. If you need an example of a conspiracy theory, I'll give you one. On September 23rd of 2001, Condoleezza Rice gave a news conference. And in that conference, she stated that we have definitive proof and evidence that links Osama bin Laden and the Taliban to the attacks on September 11th, and we will release this information, and I quote, in due time. Now, it's been nearly 4.5 years since the attacks on September 11th, and they have yet to release one piece of evidence that links Osama bin Laden and the Taliban to the attacks of September 11th. So if you charge Osama or the Taliban with conspiracy to attack America, and you have no evidence to support the contention, that by definition is a conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem here is that, like I mentioned before, we have launched two wars half a world away, we've decimated the Constitution and our rights in this country, and we've contaminated that region of the world with mm-hmm. depleted uranium, based upon what can only be defined as a conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something wrong with this picture?
Mm-hmm. All right, Dave, we have this question for you. You mentioned earlier in the broadcast here that you have had some generals, or I guess some military personnel, take a look at this video that you have, this DVD. Are they demanding an investigation as a result, or are they just saying, that's interesting, Dave, we've got to get back to work?
Well, yeah, everybody wants to know what happened. But let's face it, Daniel, the specter of a rogue government operation being behind us is absolutely terrifying. Sometimes it's easier and safer to accept the lie than to face the truth. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to live in a country where we live a lie mm-hmm. and we base all of our decisions on a lie. And it's sort of like become commonplace in this country. I mean, here, as an example, if we've all been raised and weaned on a steady diet of misinformation, disinformation, and lies, let me ask you, how do we form our opinions? Don't we form our opinions on information that's provided to us?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Of
yep.
course.
Yeah.
So if that information was disinformation or a lie, doesn't that mean that our opinions are extensions of the lie?
Absolutely. We perpetuate
Absolutely.
That. Yeah, we perpetuate it.
A USA Today poll, and I'm sure you've seen the polls in the lower left corner of the front page of the USA Today. Some
yeah.
time ago, they took a poll. As a matter of fact, I have it right over here. And the question was, whom do you trust? And the percentage of adults who trust the following institutions a lot. Okay? I'll jump to the bottom of the list. We'll start there. 6% is what the federal government got. So in other words, only 6% of Americans trust the federal government. That means 94% do not. And then I'll go over here to the TV news. Only 24% of those polled trust the news. That means 76% do not. So if 76% of Americans don't trust their news, and 94% don't trust the federal government, question, where do we get most of our information, Daniel?
From those two entities.
From government officials.
That's right.
And mainstream news.
There you go.
Now, I don't know about you. Again, a lie sometimes is more comfortable to deal with than the truth. But our lives are on the line, and the lives of our unborn great-grandchildren are on the line. And I'll tell you right now that I'm sure that every single one of the listeners out there will agree that the coming generations will either bless or curse this generation by what we do or by what we don't do.
One of the questions that I personally have, Dave, is when you consider the Pentagon and the impact that the plane supposedly made, how is it that a plane escaped all radar detection for an hour and a half?
Well, again, you're asking a question that I really don't have an answer for, but I would believe, and I'm sure anybody else out there would believe, that if we are dealing with a clandestine black operation with an unlimited budget, those planes or radars will do anything that they want them to.
Mm-hmm. Would you suggest that it is possible that this shadow operation or government or entity could literally control a radar operator's screen?
Well, I mean, let's face it. The planes that took off from the commercial airports disappeared, and they couldn't find them for a half an hour, as I recall.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you lose not one but four huge commercial aircraft? Remember when Payne Stewart, the golfer, his plane lost contact.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that story about the plane that lost pressure and was flying on automatic pilot?
Right, for an unknown distance. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were flanking that plane with F-16s within 7 minutes. Now wait a second. If they could find Payne Stewart's small aircraft and flank it within 7 minutes, why couldn't they find not one but four commercial aircraft in a half an hour?
Mm-hmm.
And why was it that a plane, if it was missing, how is it possible that a plane of that size could enter the airspace in Washington, D.C. and not have been tracked and not have been located on radar?
Yeah, we know.
Why couldn't they have F-16s up there earlier than they did?
Yeah, I have a friend of mine is an airline pilot, and he told me that whenever they go to D.C., they have to get permission to go right near the Pentagon because of the way that it's laid out, the airport's laid out, it's the easiest way. And he says that, frankly, many pilots have discussed how it would be physically impossible for a plane that size to make a loop and come down and hit the Pentagon at the angle it did. Of course, they don't talk about it in public because they may lose their jobs.
Well, that's true, too. And every single airline pilot that we've spoken with, including Neela Sagadevan, Glenn Standish, Colonel George Nelson, all of the experts, airline pilot experts and Air Force pilots, agree that as was reported, the plane was supposedly traveling at 530 miles per hour. It also was reported that it made a 330-degree hard bank turn. Now, at that speed, that plane would have been pulling approximately 5 Gs, which would have ripped the plane to pieces. Planes are not made to make a high-speed maneuvers like that.
Yeah.
Second of all, as the plane approached the Pentagon, if this indeed was a 757, at that rate of speed, there's something called ground effect, which prevents the plane from actually coming that close to the ground. And the plane would not have been able to hit in the first at the first floor of the Pentagon. It's just physics won't allow that to occur. So there are some very, very, very powerful questions that are being raised about the official story And physics is what raises the question, not people like me. Mm-hmm.
Dave, we have a lot of military personnel listen to our show, and I know you have military personnel listen to your show. And this person respects your opinion enough on 9/11. He'd like to know, in your opinion, do you think that the sickness of the Gulf vets is concocted by either a government, a shadow government, or any other type of entity?
Do I think that? What about the Gulf vets?
Do you think that the Gulf War syndrome or sickness is caused by a shadow government?
Again, you're asking a question. I mean, I can't point a finger in one particular direction. For those of you that know me out there, you'll know that my wife is Joyce Riley, and Joyce and I have been fighting for the veterans for over 10 years now. Joyce is the spokesperson for the American Gulf War Veterans Association, and with her research, and by the way, her background as a heart transplant nurse and also a medical malpractice legal expert and an expert witness, she knows how to research a case, and she knows what evidence is. And as far as the Gulf War illness is concerned, there are many reasons why our troops came back ill from the first Gulf War and are now returning ill from the second Gulf War. It's a virtual rainbow, if you will, of different reasons. We know that there were experimental vaccines given to troops. We know that they were exposed to high levels of chemicals and biologicals in the first Gulf War. We know also that they've been exposed to depleted uranium dust. And all of the above would cause all different types of problems, depending upon the individual, depending upon where they were, when they were there. And this is why it's been so hard to nail down exactly what the problem is, because there's not just one set of symptoms. There are symptoms for each one of those different exposures and the lengths of those exposures. So that's why it's been so difficult to track it down.
Yeah.
Now, whether this is the result of some shadow government, I mean, we can't say that everything that happens in this world is a result of a shadow government, you know, Illuminati, you know, type of a plot. But I'm sure that they have their hands in it. There's no doubt that they exist, and there's no doubt that, that at this point we have every reason to believe that the decimation of our military is either the result of gross neglect and incompetence, or it's done by intent.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably a combination of both.
Yeah, and I see, and I respect how that you don't have a lot of conjecture and theorizing on it, and you stick to the facts, and that's great. So, but I do need to ask a couple more questions along those lines. Do you think that as this 9/11 goes, that there are other forces besides 9/11 that say, such as the manipulation of weather? Do you think that is a part of the goal? Of what would be the goal of 9/11. Is that part of that, or is that a whole separate thing, or was that just a weather anomaly, or does it play a part in the ultimate goal of whatever the end of 9/11 is?
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, there can be no argument or no doubt that there is an effort to move the entire globe into some sort of system of world government and world economy, a world religion, if you will. I mean, this has been discussed in all kinds of magazines that are published by the Council on Foreign Relations, their Current Affairs magazine, which you can go and purchase again at the Borders or Barnes & Noble. They've been spelling out what their desires and goals have been for decades. And these people, the bottom line is their bottom line. In many cases, they don't care how they achieve their goal, just as long as they achieve their goal.
Yeah.
Now, they can't have a world government and a world economy unless they level the playing field around the world. And this is going to require a, shall we say, easing of demographic pressures. Now, that phrase I borrow from the U.S. Army War College report by Stephen Metz and James Kivitz, I think his name was. It was called A Revolution in Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War. And in that document from 1994, they spell out many of the different technologies available and how they could be used to create a revolution, if you will, for change, for the manipulation of societies, the manipulation of governments and peoples. And so it is in their mindset to use any technology that they have, whether it be mind control or weather control. You know, when I say mind control, I mean propaganda, and I mean the use of, you know, of sedatives in the food supply or water supply. And again, this is not the rantings of some wacko talk show host.
Yeah.
This is spelled out in the U.S. Army War College document itself. Yeah. And you can read the entire text of this document if you go to our sister website, GulfWarVets.com. That's GulfWarVets.com. Mm-hmm. Click on documents and just search down there until you find a revolution in military affairs. And this will pretty much spell it out for folks that are asking a question like that.
Now, Dave, do you think fluoride is a sedative, as you call it?
Fluoride. That's interesting. Well, fluoride definitely will have a dumbing effect. It affects the brain. It is a byproduct from the manufacture, I believe, of aluminum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, it sure does help stop cavities, but it also helps stop the development of the brain.
There you go.
So,
okay. All right, David.
It's sort of like one of those little convenient byproducts from the manufacturing process that they decided to see. Rather than throw it away, they figured that they put it to good use, and I guess it has a dual purpose.
Yeah. Have you given any of these DVDs to congressmen or senators?
They have been sent to Congress. I had one individual that was in Florida right after we came out with this. He was so enraged by what he saw. He wanted to make sure that every member of his Congress, every congressman in Florida, would have a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he contacted us. He says, look, I would like a copy sent to every one of my congressmen for the state of Florida, certified return receipt. I will pay for the whole thing. So, of course, we gave him a massive discount on the whole thing, and we put this project together, and we sent them all out, certified return receipt, to all of the congressmen. I can't remember how many there were. I think it was 70-something. I don't remember.
Okay.
But 58 of them were returned as refused.
Hmm.
So that's an example of whether or not your elected officials want to hear about this.
Okay. All right, Dave, we have this from New Mexico. In 2001, Aviation Week carried an article that a total of 11 airplanes deviated from their flight path on September 11th. We know of four of them. What about the other seven, including a Delta airline jetliner? Have you heard about that?
I heard a little bit about that. Again, the whole focus of the 9/11 in-plane sight project was to focus on video and photographic evidence of the attacks themselves. So as far as that area of research, that's not a strong point of mine, so I'm not really in a position to comment.
Okay, yeah, and when we're talking about the planes hitting the towers, and then, of course, Building 7, would that not require months of planning? And then if there were devices in there, wouldn't those devices have to be put into the buildings herself? I mean, for instance, when they said they need to pull Building 7, they didn't go in there with the explosives to pull it. Didn't those explosives already have to be there?
Well, if indeed we were dealing with a controlled demolition, obviously this would have been planned weeks, if not months, in advance. I mean, if the attacks occurred at 8:45 a.m. Eastern Time and 9:03 Eastern Time, respectively, with the North and South Tower, and then 8 hours later, Building 7 came down like a controlled demolition. I mean, I don't think that anybody would be able to say, oh, yeah, well, they called up the controlled demolition people and had them fly to New York within 8 hours, go in there, plant the charges, and then get out of there while all of that was occurring down at the Trade Center area. That mm-hmm. could not have happened. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if we are dealing with a controlled demolition, there can be no doubt that it would have been pre-planned.
Okay. Kind of on a lighter note, Dave, and I don't know if we can have a lighter note on what we're discussing, but what about the idea, somebody says there it was the picture of Satan in some of the blast on the side of the towers?
Yeah, I saw the picture. It's an interesting picture. I mean, that's all I can really say about it. I mean,
uh-huh.
I'm not going to say, yeah, that was Satan. Uh-huh. Sure enough, there he was. He showed his face. I'm not going to go there.
Uh-huh. But you would not deny.
It's an interesting picture, but that's sort of like, you know, people seeing the Virgin Mary in a donut or something.
Uh-huh.
You know?
But
I don't know.
But you would not deny the striking resemblance.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's an interesting picture. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, what about the CD cover of that rap group blowing up the towers there? I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh, yeah. That came out, I believe it was about 3 months before the September 11th attack. There was also a television series called The Lone Gunman that had an episode that was aired, I believe it was in May of 2001, where there was a hijacking and somebody was going to force an airliner into one of the Trade Center towers. And that was very eerily similar to the, of course, the attacks on September 11th. So there are a couple of other issues there, illustrations or TV shows that that alluded to the attacks on September 11th before they occurred. But again, I don't know how to comment on either one of those things. Either they were coincidences, and I certainly I hardly think that a black rap group would have inside intel and then broadcast it to the world on an album cover. I would think that would probably have to be some sort of a coincidence.
And I don't know what your views are, and I don't want to go into too much spiritual stuff, but could it be that something of this sort of cataclysmic happening sort of maybe permeated the human psyche? I mean, do you think that events like that, maybe perhaps premonitions, people had premonitions? Do world events like that, even Pearl Harbor, the beginning of that, there were people having premonitions of that? Do you think that realm exists where people can get a forewarning of some sort of doom or cataclysmic event anyway?
Well, absolutely, I believe that. I mean, it's been written in the Bible. It's been documented in all the major religions about people having visions. Of course, that's the term that they use. Today, you'd say you had a premonition. But the bottom line here is that these types of, if you will, paranormal occurrences have been going on through history. So, yes, I do believe that there is a spiritual aspect to this. And I do believe we're dealing with a classic battle between good and evil, between light and darkness, between God and Satan, whatever that you want to call it. There's absolutely no doubt that there are some very evil people in this world, and there are some very good people as well. The only problem is that common sense tells me that good people have no desire to, they don't lust for money or power. So if good people don't lust for money and power, who has all the money and power? The answer is bad people, okay?
Touche on that one. You know, I notice. What about this train of thought here? If the government, and in particular George W., believes that, say, our war against terrorism has prevented, because everybody's saying, well, we've not had any more attacks, and George Bush really could probably take credit for that. Say, look, we've intercepted, we've taken the war over there. Thereby extension, our war over there has prevented actions from happening here. Do you think that on the same token, people like you and I and others that are in the ground swell of people trying to find the truth get together, do you think that shows like this, shows like yours, DVDs like you've produced, is preventing the government from doing what they say they're stopping terrorists from doing, from proceeding down their evil path? Are we slowing them down?
Well, I suppose the question is who are the terrorists? Okay, if Osama bin Laden and the Al Qaeda and all that are truly the ones that were behind September 11th, well then yes, yours is a valid question. However, if, and I'm just saying if, we're just thinking outside of the cage here, if, as is indicated by the video and photographic evidence and the testimony of military and commercial airline experts, that we are dealing with a clandestine operation, well, then the whole game is changed. Everything is changed. So the question at this point should be, who are the terrorists? Now, terrorists, you know, are people that generate terror. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. I mean, if somebody terrorizes somebody else, it makes them a terrorist. Can we agree with that?
Let's agree, yes.
Okay. So with that, let's see what the mainstream media does and what the government officials do, constantly telling us that we've got to be scared, and here we've elevated the alert to orange alert, or, you know, yellow alert, or what have you. I mean, they're constantly scaring the American people. Look at what's going on. So is the mainstream media playing the role of terrorist at this point? It depends on, I suppose, how we define that. But the bottom line here is that fear is control. I think we can all agree with that one. We've heard that before.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep the American people fearful, they will be easily controlled. They look for the government to protect them from all the boogeymen that are out there. And as long as the American people continue to go to the government to provide protection and to take away that fear, well, then the government enjoys that level of control.
Okay. All right.
I mean, they're playing this very well. I mean, we're dealing with absolutely brilliant people, whoever is behind this whole thing. But look what we've given up in the past several years, Daniel.
Yeah.
We've given up our rights. We've given up, you know, the ability to even speak openly in some cases. I mean, a lot of people don't even want to talk about these things because they're afraid they'll be ridiculed or demonized or somehow, you know, punished for discussing these things openly. Oh, how dare you even think about that? Say that about my government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're un-American. I mean, what was it? Michael Savage, the talk show host a couple years ago, was saying during the buildup of hostilities, you know, before we went over there to take out Saddam and blow up Iraq, that anybody that spoke out against President Bush should be arrested for sedition. Now, is this the way that a free country operates? I don't think so.
Dissent is the highest form of patriotism. Hey, Dave, I'll tell you what, we've got to go to break, so just stay with us, please. Everybody, you're listening to The Edge radio broadcast. My name is Daniel Lott, and on our newsmaker line this evening is Dave Von Kleist, and we're discussing 9/11. And if you have any question for him, go to the edgeam.com website, click on Fast Blast, it'll come right here to the studio, and we'll be right back.
We call it VoIP, V-O-I-P. It stands for Voice Over Internet Protocol. Some call it Internet Telephone, others call it Digital Voice. But no matter what you call it, it's VoIP, and it's here to stay. Now, here are three facts about VoIP that you should know. Fact 1, VoIP gives you 100% free long-distance service. It has features such as caller ID, call waiting, find me, follow me, voicemail, and much more for only $24.99 per month. Fact 2, in the next 5 to 7 years, millions of people will be making their phone calls using VoIP. Fact 3, Lightyear Alliance is the only telephone company in America letting people like you and me cash in on VoIP. Now, would you like to join me and cash in on VoIP? Then click on the free DVD icon on our website, lightyearnow.com, and I'll send you a free Lightyear Business Opportunity DVD movie. It will explain how you can cash in on this exciting, one-of-a-kind business opportunity. I'm Daniel Ott, host of the Edge Radio broadcast. Don't delay. Order your free DVD today.
Here's another song from GW 43, that's me, in the Carlisle Group. Bomb maker, make me a bomb to plant in Iraq and blame on Saddam. I got to somehow find WMD, so make up a bomb for me. bug maker, make me some bugs and fill up some jars and fill up some jugs. My public approval is slipping, you see, so make...
And welcome back to the Edge Radio broadcast. That was direct from Dave Von Kleist's website, The Power Hour. Dave, welcome back.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, well, we're talking about 9/11, and you've got to take a lot of heat for even having the view. Like you just said, I don't know that Americans can even remember when we could talk openly about different subjects. We have been conditioned not to speak about different topics, and how is it we're ever going to break out of that cycle?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know how we're going to break away from that because, as you just pointed out, you know, it's always, you know, polite conversation to discuss things like your favorite football teams or the weather and stuff like that. But you should never talk about politics and religion because that's where you get into trouble. But wait a second. What makes the world go round? What determines the destiny of mankind is discussion about politics and religion. And so... You know, that's one of those, I hate to use the term brainwashing, but that's exactly what it is. You know, there's all kinds of different concepts that have been drummed into the psyche of the American people. Things like, you can't fight City Hall, or I'm only one person, or my vote doesn't count anyway. I mean, things like that. These are the things that affect the psyche of Americans and prevent them from moving forward. And, you know, we've heard the term, you know, my government, right or wrong.
Yeah.
And we've got this mistaken impression that somehow that represents a patriotic ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. My government, right or wrong, is not patriotism. That's Nazism.
Whoa.
If your government is wrong, it is not just your right, but as Thomas Jefferson penned in the Declaration of Independence, it is your duty to change that government when it adamantly refuses to correct its own errors.
Yeah.
That is what patriotism is. Every single man and woman should be directly and actively involved in this process mm-hmm. of government in this country. And the problem that we've got is that we blindly wave our flags on patriotic holidays. We blow the dust off of our flags on the 4th of July and Veterans Day and Memorial Day, and we sing feel-good songs. You know, I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free. You know, I mean, this is blind patriotism.
Yeah.
Well, because if people were really patriotic, they'd sit down and they'd read the Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. apply it to what's going on today, and I think that you would find that the grievances that were penned by Thomas Jefferson are nothing compared to what we have right now with our federal government. Now, please don't get me wrong. I don't hate this country. I love this country. I am patriotic right to the bone, and I will die defending this Constitution and the rights that were given to us by our founding fathers. And that's exactly the point. Your freedom isn't just going to grow by itself. The garden of liberty, the seeds were planted long ago by our founding fathers, and they left it to us to tend the garden. That means we have to break a sweat and get our fingernails dirty. We have to go out there and weed occasionally. We have to water the garden.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take care of it. But America's become apathetic. And, you know, they said that before the fall of the Roman Empire, give them bread and games. Well, today we've got football, beer, and pizza. And I'll tell you that it seems to me that the only way to get a rise out of the American people and get them off of their big, fat, pimple-covered butt is to cancel a football game and a beer delivery. That's a sad commentary of where we are, but unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Dave, is it possible that we can vote the tyranny off our backs?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's become very painfully evident that our voting system is corrupted these days. And I would highly suggest the listeners out there read a book entitled Vote Scam by the late James Collier, James and Ken Collier. They had investigated the integrity of the voting system way back in the 80s, and they found that voter fraud had been going on for years and years and years and years. It's become standard operating procedure in most states now. And this is why there's a big push now for paper ballots. I think we've all heard about the controversy of the elections and, you know, the connection in Ohio, Diebold, California. I mean, there's so many states now that are realizing that we have a problem with the system of voting in this country. Now, I would ask you, look at some of the third world nations that have revolutions. What do they have revolutions over? What reasons would legitimize a revolution? Well, you take a look at what goes on in a third world nation. These people are fighting desperately to maintain their quote-unquote democracies. And in doing so, they have 80% turnout when they have an election, 85% turnout when they have elections. What kind of turnouts do we have in this country?
About 20%
of registered
mm-hmm.
voters.
Yeah, less. Yeah.
How many registered voters? How many eligible voters are there, and how many registered voters are there? So I think it's clear to see that, you know, if you've only got a 40% of the population that's eligible to vote, and they register, now we're down to 40%. Now of that 40%, only 30% of that actually gets out and makes the vote. How dare we call this a democracy when apathy has taken over this country to the point where we have such a low voter turnout?
Yeah.
We ought to be ashamed of ourselves as Americans.
I think
reason we ought to be ashamed is because we blindly believe what the mainstream media and the government officials tell you. And as we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, the federal government enjoys a whopping 6% trust rating. And the mainstream media enjoys a 24% trust rating. And if we'd only get our information from those two sources, you know, we have to look outside of the box. They say that the truth is never easy to find. But Daniel, how easy is it for us to sit on our lazy boys or our couches with a remote control and channel surf between CNN and Fox and ABC and NBC and the networks. How easy is that to do? It's pretty doggone easy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So if the truth is never easy to find, how much truth could there be there? So this is why, in order to find the truth, you have to look for it. You have to actively seek it out. Look for alternative sources of information. Look for radio broadcasts that don't come under the thumb of the big corporations. Because if you don't look for the truth, you're not going to find it.
Mm. That well said there, Dave. And I like what you said earlier when we had a conversation. You said that we can stick it to the man by give him a death by a thousand needles. You know, just your broadcast, my broadcast, others out there talking to our neighbors, getting off the, like you said, quit talking about stupid football games and talk about, you know, your rights are virtually gone and washed up. And it gets worse. These laws are being passed ad nauseum every day to control our activities, where we go, what we do, and now we've got the government prying in every way they possibly can, sneaking in our computers, spying on people without warrants. I see that this is a slippery slope, that we're well slid down that hill.
Well, absolutely. And you know, it's one thing to talk about these things, Daniel, and I have to applaud you, first of all, for having somebody like me on your broadcast, you know, because I realize some of the concepts that I'm talking about are really upsetting some people, maybe even getting a little ticked off out there. And I apologize for getting folks riled up there, but we've got to do something to get people off of the fence. We've got to realize what our heritage is and what our responsibility is, not just to ourselves, but to our project, to our kids, mm-hmm. our great-grandkids. They are relying upon us to do some doggone thing to prevent this country from going down the hopper. And if we continue to wait for somebody else to be the guy to do it, well, then it's just not going to get done.
Mm.
So, I mean, talking is great, but we have to start taking action. And one action that can be taken, and my own personal hot button, is the mainstream media. Now, I worked in media now for, 25, 30 years now. I've been basically a musician and a professional announcer. I do, you know, character voices, and I thank you for playing some of the goofy bumper music that I put together there. But, I'm no specialist on anything. But the bottom line here is, you know, you should never sell yourself short. Everybody's opinion is valid. You don't necessarily have to go to an expert to have them explain things for you. I mean, after all, you don't have to be a registered, certified, and licensed pyrotechnic expert to have a valid claim of fire. Now, if you recognize that there's a problem, and I don't care whether you're a garbage collector or a hamburger flipper or, you know, a textile worker, or whether you drive a truck, it doesn't make any difference. Your opinion is just as valid as the lawyer's opinion or the dentist's opinion or the doctor's opinion. And one way that we can affect a change is to challenge the mainstream media. And when I say challenge, I mean put it to them in a way that they understand. Hit them in their pocket, because that's what makes them understand. Now, one way you could do that. Now, you're in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what your local affiliate television stations are, but I would suggest that if you really, if you feel that your mainstream media, whether they be the TV stations or the other radio stations that carry all the corporate approved talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh or mm-hmm. O'Reilly or Hannity or Dr. Laura or all the stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
if you're sick to death of hearing that stuff, and if you believe that the TV stations are feeding you propaganda, well, then here is something that you can do. During your nightly news, and I mean your local nightly news, sit down with a paper and pencil, and every time they go to a commercial break, write down the advertisers. Now, it's one thing to see a commercial for Sears or some national advertisement. It's another thing to see a commercial for the local tire shop, you know, Bob's Tires down on Main Street. Write down Bob's Tires on Main Street or any other local advertisers, because it's their advertising dollar that pays the bills at that local TV affiliate station. So what you do is you compile a list of all of the different local advertisers. And you can do the same thing with your newspaper or your local radio station. Write down the local advertisers and get together with your friends and discuss the situation and then work together, contact these local advertisers and say, hi, is this Bob's Tires? Yeah, I heard your commercial last night on the TV news. Yeah, well, guess what? I don't appreciate the news lying to me, and you're paying for them to do it. So as a result, I'm not going to buy tires at your tire shop. I'm going to tell my family not to buy tires and my friends at work not to buy tires and everybody I come into contact with not to buy tires from you because you're advertising and supporting this type of propaganda. They'll get the message real flaming quick. And then you can follow up and call the TV station and say, hey, guess who I just talked to? I just talked to Bob's Tires, and I'm not going to give them my business anymore because they're advertising on your TV station. They'll get the message real quick. You hit them where they live.
Advertising
That's
dollars.
In their pockets. That's one way to affect the change.
So that really, if people look around, there's probably a lot of things that they can do rather than say, well, there's no use to vote because my vote doesn't do anything. And I think, you know, inch by inch, life is a cinch is what I look at it. And with all of the accumulation of people doing their little part, like you doing your part and I doing my part and the people in the local areas doing their part, you know, at some point we've got to outnumber the bad guys. The good guys, they can't take us all down.
Well, no, they can't, and I will tell you that I'm sure you realize that for every one of them, there's probably 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 or maybe even 100 of us. The difference is that we're not organized, and we've also been intimidated to think that we just can't do anything. So if you've got 99 of us are sitting on our butts and only one person gets up and challenges, well, then it's a one-on-one situation against a monster that has an unlimited budget. That they got the money from the taxes that we've been paying. So the bottom line here, it's up to everybody, no matter how, you know, no matter what your level of ability is, no matter what you do, to get up and get involved, and because your life depends upon it. I don't know if you realize it or right now, but I mean, we are on the precipice right now of falling into what could turn out to be another global war. We already have the global war on terrorism. But, I mean, you got GW going on television talking about we got to consider a preemptive strike to North Korea because they're putting together nuclear weapons. And Iran now is trying to get nuclear weapons, and Syria is trying to get them. So we have to consider a preemptive strike. Well, wait a second. The rest of the world has seen 9/11 in plain sight. The rest of the world can see that this war on terror is most likely based upon a fraud and was perpetrated by people yet to be discovered.
Whoa.
And if this is true, then, you know, they might be focusing their crosshairs on the good old USA considering the same option. So America better start considering the fact that as long as we allow these leaders of ours to take us down this road and do nothing about it, keep in mind that silence is consent. And if the rest of the world decides that they hate the United States, they don't just hate the elected officials. They hate Americans because of their apathy and not exercising their right and duty to stop this madness. And we just might get everything that we got coming to us.
Yeah. And the other thing is, Dave, you mentioned the 99 and the 1. I think one of the things the government does, or its henchmen, or however you want to put it, is make people think they're the only ones with that view. You know,
please. Example, I want to take a couple steps back. You mentioned the Gulf War illness. Now, again, Joyce and I have been fighting the Veterans Administration. We've been trying to fight for the veterans, to get them compensation, to find out what happened to these poor guys. And I will tell you that, as an example, in the state of California, Los Angeles, we had so many veterans that were contacting us back in 96 and 97. And, you know, the funny thing was is that we had so many had gone to the LAVA. And they go in there and they tell these guys their problems, and you know what they'd say? They say, well, you know what? You're the only one that we've heard about this before. We got hundreds of these guys that were told the exact same thing in this exact same office. Oh, you know, you're the only one that we heard about this problem. Oh, yeah, well, you too. You're the only one. And you're the only one. I mean, this is how they work it. And this is how they keep everybody separated from one another. Again, remember, divided we fall. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Hey, Dave, got this question here. Were you familiar with the article in Popular Mechanics that tried to debunk the idea of of the towers collapsing and while ignoring Building 7?
Oh, yes. I have the copy right here next to me. And I couldn't have been more pleased when the property mechanics folks did this because, I'll give you two different examples. In the Building 7 issue, they had several photographs there. Now, remember, the original story was Building 7 collapsed because of the damage that was incurred mm-hmm. with the collapse of the North Tower. Well, here in their own aerial photograph, there's not one piece of debris, let alone damage, on the roof of Building 7. Oh, but then they said, what happened is, what it was is that the building was scooped out from the 10th floor on down, and there was no support, and there were fires in there. Well, then they got a photograph of what appears to be the south side of the building, and there's no scoop out at all. You could see a fire up on the area of, like, maybe the 20th floor. I can't count how many floors it was in the picture, but there was nothing scooped out. And then as far as the pod issue, getting back to the pod, I found their testimony in the magazine was very interesting. They brought to their table an expert, or their expert, I should say. The man's name was Ronald Greeley. And if you just give me a second here, mm-hmm. like I said, I've got the magazine sure. right here, mm-hmm. and I can read you exactly what it said in the Popular Mechanics magazine in regard to this pod. Okay, here it is. I read, Popular Mechanics sent a digital scan of the original photo, and let me stop right there. We're discussing the photograph that was published on the inside cover of New York Magazine, and it showed something attached to the belly of the plane. Popular Mechanics sent a digital scan of the original photo to Ronald Greeley, director of the Space Photography Laboratory at Arizona State University. Greeley is an expert at analyzing images to determine the shape and features of geological formations based on shadow and light effects. Again, he's an expert at determining features of geological formations. In other words, this guy looks at space photographs and says, this is a mountain and this is a valley. That's their expert. My expert is Colonel George Nelson, United States Air Force, 30 years experience identifying aircraft and aircraft parts. Now, if you had to choose between two experts, which one would you choose?
I'd go with the aircraft specialist.
There you go. Okay. So the point is that Mr. Greeley, in this magazine, I will continue on reading, and I feel like I'm reading something written by John Leiwitz from the Eyewitness News. Yeah, that's the ticket. Anyway, it says here, Greeley dismissed the notion that the Howard photo, that's the photo returning we are referring to, he dismisses the notion that the photo reveals a pod. In fact, the photo reveals only the Boeing's right fairing, the pronounced bulge that contains the landing gear. He concludes that sunlight glistening off the fairing gave it an exaggerated look. So according to Ronald Greeley, this pod was created by sunlight on the fairing. Now, a couple weeks later on the Art Bell show, Art Bell interviewed Ben Chertoff, not Michael Chertoff, Ben Chertoff, who happens to be Michael Chertoff's cousin. Ben Chertoff, when asked about the pod on the radio show, stated that the pod was created largely from a shadow of the engine. Now, Ben Chertoff is the science researcher for Popular Mechanics magazine. So the expert, Ron Greeley, in the magazine, says it's sunlight. The science researcher for Popular Mechanics magazine says it's a shadow. Question, how can something be shadow and sunlight at the same time? Do I hear T for Two playing in the background?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, so there, it sounds to me like their witnesses, their testimony was tainted.
Well, one way or the other. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I mean, it's one or the other. And the bottom line here is that they're contradicting themselves, number one. And the other thing is they're being very disingenuous. Getting back to this issue about the Building 7 collapse, the photographs that they published in their magazine, and again, I got it right here, it's on page 77, they had three photos. One of them, of Building 7, they put a circle around it as the building was collapsing here. It says that Experts say the combination, not a demolition style implosion, led to the roofline kink that signals the World Trade Center 7's progressive collapse. Now, this infers that we could see the kink in the roofline before it collapsed. That photograph was taken during the collapse. So, at best, this is disingenuous by Popular Mechanics. So you could see why I was thrilled on how they handled their quote-unquote investigation into the their debunking article. The title of the magazine was Debunking the Lies of September 11th.
Right.
But in fact, what they put into their magazine, as I said, was disingenuous or just flat-out incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Their
own experts were contradicting themselves, so
uh-huh.
I wasn't at all upset by them. I was thrilled by the work that they did because it proved what they're doing.
What do you think about those photographs released by the Pentagon all they show was the explosion? How does the Pentagon explain or anybody explain the wrong date on those photographs?
I really don't know, and I think it's inconsequential. I don't think it really matters. And I thought that the release of those photographs was the timing was rather curious. Because they were released in the spring of 2002. Now, I believe it was the end of February of 2002 that I became aware of this website called Hunt the Boeing, Test Your Perceptions. And a group of Frenchmen, people in France, had put together the website and were challenging the official story of what had happened at the Pentagon. And, of course, shortly after that, Terry Masson had come out with his book about Le Pentagate, 9/11, the big lie. And they were very summarily dismissed as kooks and wackos by the mainstream media, and that's what got me looking into the Pentagon, because I thought that they were a little bit wacko too. But it was because of the magazines that we had purchased at the supermarket checkout, and we all remember Newsweek, Time, and People magazine, and a whole bunch of others that were at the supermarket checkout. Well, we bought them all, and so when we poured through all those photographs, the more we looked at them, the more we realized that the French were asking some very good questions. So I put together an article called From Deception to Revelation, and I posted it on the Internet. And the day that I posted it, somebody sent me some photographs that were taken before the collapse of the outer ring. And those photographs clearly showed that there was a very small hole in the front of the Pentagon and no recognizable wreckage whatsoever. So I posted an addendum to the article, part two of From Deception to Revelation, and I would ask you folks out there that are listening online, you can check it out. Go to 911inplainsight.com, and that's planesite.com, and you can read the article there. Now then, shortly after that, I was summarily dismissed as a kook and a wacko and a government agent, a COINTELPRO agent, disinformation agent, Mossad agent, you name it. One group was saying that I was some part of a Nazi, white hate group or something like that. Another was saying I was Israeli. It's crazy what goes on. But the point was that the questions that were being raised were based upon the photographic evidence, and that's sort of what got this whole ball rolling here.
All right, Dave, we're near the end of our broadcast. Anything you'd like to say about your website, your DVD, or anything else, go right ahead.
Well, yes, sure. The DVD is available for copying. If you want to make copies of it and give them away, I encourage you to do so. We provide them free to any victims or the family members of 9/11, firefighters in New York, police officers in New York. Just simply contact us. Let us know. Show some proof that that you're with one of those organizations. We'll send these to you absolutely free. We also send them out free to elected members of Congress, senators, people that are in the media. Just send your credentials that we know who we're talking to, and we'll send them to you free. Now, to keep this effort up and keep getting this word out for everybody else, yes, we ask $15 plus $5 shipping and handling, and you can call the toll-free number Monday through Friday. And that number is 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or you could visit 911inplainsight.com. And that's planesite.com. And we invite you all to think outside the cage and join the power team. We broadcast live from 7 till 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, and that's Central Time. And you can listen online at thepowerhour.com.
Okay. All right, Dave, well said. And I do recommend everybody get a copy of that DVD, if nothing else, for the history and the archival images in it that are pre-manipulation by the government. And, Dave, can we have you back on the program again sometime?
Oh, please. I'd love to be back. And I'd like to tell the listeners out there, hey, look, it. If I'm a kook, if I'm a wacko, if I'm a nutcase, well, then somebody's got to stop me. But if I'm right, and if what we see in these video clips and with these photographs, if what we see is real, and we have every reason to believe it is, because it's very easily confirmed in all the different video sources at Barnes and Noble and Borders, et cetera, et cetera. If what we're seeing is real, then we're in a whole lot of trouble, and every doggone one of us is charged now with the responsibility of getting active and stopping this madness.
There you go. All right, Dave. Well, thanks for coming on the Edge Radio broadcast.
Thank you, Daniel. I appreciate it. God bless you, and God bless America.
That's me and the Carlo Group. I was talking on the telephone with Tony Blair. We was looking for intelligence that he would share. I need some information that they can't rebuke. He said Saddam was buying stuff to build a nuke. Well, let's roll. Everybody, let's roll. If I'm gonna play the game and score, well, then I have to launch another war. Well, making lots of money is a lot of fun. We make it by creating wars that can't be won. We'll blame it on Al-Qaeda nearly every day, but we'll never tell the sheep, oh, it's the CIA. Well, let's roll. Let's roll. Yeah, get down, Jenny. Well, gonna play the game and score, and now I have to build another war. Well, there's Romney and Dick Cheney and my daddy, too. We've been planning it for years of what we're gonna do. We gave money to Osama and the Taliban, and then 9/11 started off a master plan. Let's roll. Let's roll. Gonna get them. If I'm gonna play the game and score, well, now I have to make another war. I'm gonna get down now.
You go ahead, Junior. Barbara'd be proud of you.
Thanks, Daddy. Well, people looking at the bottom of the plane that hit the South Tower, now they're looking again. There was something on the bottom, then there was a flash, but I really don't care, cause I'm raking in the cash. Oh, let's roll. Everybody, let's roll. If I'm gonna play the game and score, well, then I have to build another.
You have been listening to The Edge with Daniel Ott. To subscribe to The Edge newsletter, log on to TheEdgeAM.com. That's TheEdgeAM.com, where you can find out more about the guests and topics discussed on the air. The Edge is being brought to you by Internet Solutions, home of affordable website design and low-cost Internet access. Visit Internet Solutions at ES4.com. That's ES4.com. Until next week, for the Edge Radio broadcast, I'm Chris Moore. See you on the Edge.